Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb, a Republican who represents New York's 31st District, which includes all of Ontario and parts of Seneca County. Leader Kolb, I am so delighted that you see us worthy enough to keep coming back and talking to us. It's just great to have you here.
It's always a pleasure to be here, Alan.
Okay, so what's hot, what's not?
Well, I think in the current world that we live in, it's very scary. I mean, certainly with the recent terrorist attacks in Paris and the heightened awareness even more so than before, especially when people think they're safe on the streets of a major city, going to a concert or enjoying a dinner with friends. I think this really further demonstrates the type of world, dangerous world that we're living in. And you almost hate to even say it, but it's almost like you can't trust anybody that's around you just because it's the whole dynamic has changed.
Well, the governor gave a speech at Harvard recently in which he announced that we're the kind of state which accepts immigrants and that we have a pro-immigrant history. And then there are Republican governors, mostly around the country, who are saying, we don't think it's safe to bring these immigrant Syrian populations into our place here because somebody may be smuggled in with them.
Well, certainly, I think there's both right positions. We should have open arms to folks that seek to be a part of this great nation of ours, but through a carefully vetted process, because right now there's no real profile of a terrorist. You have Middle Eastern terrorists, for sure, but I'm talking about gender. You've got women, you've got men, young men, and who knows how they would manipulate a child in a public space. These people have no conscience. They have no rules to play by. So although I understand the governor's pontification about the country and the Statue of Liberty and all that, but God forbid we were to have a terrorist attack in New York State or New York City, which were always a major target based on a less than careful approach, because I think the ultimate priority should be to keep the citizens of this country safe.
I suspect they agree with you, by the way. I mean, we had a listener call-in program not that long ago in which I was astounded by the number of liberal callers who believed what you just said. But how do you say to the rest of the world, Brian Kolb, we expect you to take Syrian refugees who are, you know, they're dying on boats, they're going under the water, their kids are being maimed. We understand why they're fleeing, but how do you expect the rest of the world to take these immigrants but not us?
Well, I think you can take immigrants. I think we should take immigrants, but we shouldn't do it haphazardly or without a very, very thorough vetting of who they are they got legitimate passports, what's their background, what villages or communities did they come from. And certainly, I think every country in the world should be going through that process. And even, you know, just recent story yesterday about with a legitimate passport, someone trying to access through Germany. I mean, every country's got a stake in the game here, not just the United States, not just Russia, who's now finding out, oh my goodness, we really must have a problem here. France, I haven't heard tough talk from France like this in I don't know how long. And I think the more countries that realize the whole world's and civilization is in danger because you have people that have no respect for human life, no respect for innocent human life. And that's the type of enemy that's really trying to destroy our country. And we shouldn't let anything prevent us from doing whatever it takes to keep us safe.
Well, you're the minority leader of the New York State Assembly, so maybe I shouldn't be asking you foreign policy questions, but I can't resist asking you, boots on the ground over there or not?
My initial reaction would be no. Not without having an overall plan, because obviously, you know, these are men and women soldiers that we should not put in harm's way unless there's an absolute must necessity to do so. It should be a position of last plan to implement. And certainly, I think America in general doesn't have the heart for more loss of life on the ground. However, having said that, I think that we've let the ISIS folks exist for too long. And I think the best approach, quite frankly, is if you have a unilateral approach with the United Nations, France, Germany, Russia, you name it, all participating in destroying ISIS. Now, that's a whole different ballgame. And it shouldn't be the United States as the only country in the world to have skin in the game.
Okay. Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb is with us today. Let's go to New York. Let me ask you the descending questions that occur to me. Top is you have a governor, Andrew Cuomo, who did brilliantly in the first election, not so well in the second election. And his numbers, I think, are improving a little right now, but not a lot. Who you got to run against him in the next election? The two that come to my mind are Rob Astorino and Chris Gibson. I have a feeling, prejudicing this conversation, that the leadership of the Republican Party is looking a little harder at Astorino than at Gibson. And I'm wondering where you are.
Oh, I don't sense that in terms of having a preference one way or the other. I think they're both quality individuals. I supported Rob. I think I was the only Republican that actually wrote him a check in terms of a state legislator, at least from a leadership position. And I thought Rob had a heck of a campaign. I think what's always tough is the demographics in New York State and certainly trying to raise money, and people think that you have a chance to win. And I think what Rob proved by winning 46 out of 62 counties that he could win. But certainly it's an uphill climb, and depending upon where the folks at home are at 2 years from now, and I've met with Chris Gibson. He's very impressive, congressional representative, very bright. I quite frankly think either one of them would be a very good governor, and I can tell you I haven't weighed in on this yet because it's too soon.
What
I
is
mean,
Chris
it could,
Gibson?
Could even be a draft cold movement out there.
I'm not laughing. Tell me, what could Chris Gibson do to get better known around the state?
Well, actually, I think he's doing what Rob Astorino has done, which is he's attending a variety of different functions. He's visited different parts of the state, and he's continuing to do that. I know I've spoke to people, I've heard him speak at different Republican events throughout the state, and that's how you get around. And I think, obviously, it seems to me he's interested in running for governor because he announced early he's not going to run for re-election for Congress, and he's been moving around the state a lot.
Well, he's been here many times, and basically we have great admiration for him. But I have to say that the real question is, you said, well, he's got all the upstate counties, fine, but he still needs Long Island, he still needs, you know, Manhattan, Queens, Brooklyn, Staten Island. How does somebody break that sort of barrier, a Republican, to win in the city?
Well, a lot has to do with what's the current state of environment when the gubernatorial race takes place 2 years from now. The whole dynamic could be changed depending upon
sure.
what's going on with the economy. And really, that's why it's so crazy to try to predict who's going to run or what the issues are going to be. Who even knows if Governor Cuomo is going to run for re-election yet?
Mm-hmm.
So,
if you were a betting man, you'd say yes or no.
If I was betting right now, I'd say he would.
Yeah, me too. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, because obviously the presidency is off the table.
Yeah, and he can't go to the cabinet because he was there already, and they're not going to make him Secretary of State, you know, or Attorney General.
So. Correct. Unless there was some really high-profile cabinet position, I think the governor is going to stay put. And I think he enjoys being governor. Having said that, you know, it depends on competition and the environment and the economy
when,
and all
that. When Chris Gibson was here, he called the governor a bully. Would you agree with that?
I do. Mm-hmm. I think anybody that wants to really— and this is not personal attacks. This is just a fact. There's just so much arm twisting. The governor calls every state agency, local officials, when he wants to do a press conference, you need to be there. You must be there. There's an implied threat that if you don't cooperate, might pull funding. All those sort of things. You hear all those stories all the time. But a lot of people don't want to talk about it publicly. And why is that? Because they're afraid of retribution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know something about that. So let me just proceed and talk to you about the great trials that are going on. You have Shelley Silver, the former Speaker of the Assembly, still a Assemblyman. Lots of dirty garbage coming out about the way in which the state politics work. And you have the same thing going on in your party with Dean Skelos, the Senate Majority, former Senate Majority Leader, on trial with his son, you know, for trying to get the son jobs and the rest of it. But the sewer has been opened. And now we're seeing stuff that even though some of us may think we knew, we're now knowing it.
Well, that's correct. And I think the cases are a little bit different in the fact that, at least allegedly, that Shelley lined his pockets with millions of dollars as a result of him being Speaker of the State Assembly. The alleged scheme with Dean Skelos is about using his position of influence to help his son financially. And those are the sort of things that maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago, you know, people look the other way, oh, that's the trappings of power. But I think what we found out is that when you're personally or a member of your family is personally benefiting from things that you're doing as an elected official, that's exactly what should not be occurring as being a public official. It shouldn't be about you or your family. It should be about serving your constituents.
Now, Republican Leader Kolb, I want to just ask you this. Why is it that New York State can't seem to clean up its own garbage, that we have to rely on a somewhat brilliant political actor, Preet Bharara, to come in here and do it for the state as opposed to the state cleaning up its own stuff?
Well, I think it's fair to say that it's always about self-preservation, status quo. I know we'll talk about in the coming months, Constitutional Convention, the pros and cons of that.
You for it or against it?
I am for it.
I'm against it.
I know that. And that's why I said we'll have another opportunity to hash that baby out. But really, this is why we've talked about term limits for legislative leaders, term limits for committee chairs, so you don't get embedded power. And from the standpoint, even now that Carl Hastie's saying, you know, we're going to take...
Carl Hastie, the current speaker, yeah,
is going to use campaign money that's been donated to committee to protect incumbents. Now,
would you do that in the Republican Party? Take money you'd collected and use it to defend your assembly members who are being primaried?
I would never say never, but generally would prefer not to, because mm-hmm. a primary is a primary. And so whoever wins the primary, the incumbent or the non-incumbent, is now going to be a prospective member of your conference. And if you pick a side, somebody's going to be unhappy with you, especially the person that won that you didn't back. So it's, you know, why go to those political minefields if you don't have to? And certainly, I think what has been made about Speaker Hastie's decision, or at least public comments about that, is that that's a way to keep the incumbents beholden to you, knowing that you're going to be looking out for their back in a primary election.
Talk to us a little bit about the governor's approach and your approach to the way in which we test towards our educational achievement in this state. There are many people who say we spend too much money without getting enough results, and yet there were a lot of people who were for, you know, holding the system accountable, which now seems to have done a direct U-turn.
Well, first and foremost, I think the big picture is, do we want to prepare our students for the future in a global economy? The answer is yes, which means if you can't have higher learning standards, we should have that. Obviously, with Common Core and its execution and implementation was a total, absolute, unmitigated disaster, which is why you had so many people upset with it. And yes, we should have teacher evaluations, as we should have administrator evaluations. And what are we getting for a return on our tax dollar? We spend as much, if not the most, money, local and state money combined, on education in the country. But you go to our urban areas, and their test performance or their student performance and graduation rates are not anywhere near where they should be. But that's also a different environment. What are we doing about restoring family involvement with the students' education? And you have less of that in your urban areas than you do the suburbs or the rural areas. But certainly, education is an important topic. We've talked about accountability, responsibility. But I think what the governor is doing for a while was basically taking out his political agenda on the teaching profession. And I thought that was absolutely wrong and incorrect to do. And as you know, in any, especially state this diverse, in all the different stakeholders, you got to have people in a room sitting down talking to each other and not using political forums to bash or ridicule or critique things that, okay, they need to be better, but going public about it and bashing them or trying to create systems that punish is not the way to go.
Leader Brian Kolb, you know, there's a sort of traditional tension between Democrats and Republicans. Democrats quite frequently saying, let's make it easier for everybody to vote, same-day registration. Republicans who are saying, not so fast, we want to make sure everybody's serious, you know, not necessarily making it easier to vote. Can you sort of parse that for us?
Well, there's a difference between making it easier to vote in terms of convenience,
yeah,
versus the process of who gets to vote based on their, are they a United States citizen? Are they a resident, sure, of New York State? Do you have falsified records where people that are voting that don't have a right to vote? Those two arguments get mixed, and they should be segregated because process of having an easier time to vote, great. But you just got to make sure that the people that are voting are qualified to vote and have the right to vote. This is not a guarantee. It's a privilege to vote if you're a citizen, and that's where the Democrats tend to forget those rules, and they try to take advantage of that, especially in the urban areas.
Well, I mean, there are such things as I said, same-day registration, voting by mail, voting by computer. Obviously, in some states, it's already being done. It's coming. With you as a Republican leader, I'm assuming you're not going to, well, you're in the minority in your house, but not in the other house. I'm assuming you're not going to be all that for it.
I will be for making it easier to vote as long as we have tight controls about who is voting and do they qualify to vote. And have we verified through a photo ID that, for instance, anybody, if we have same-day voting, online voting, that there is a absolute official ID that matches the face of that person that wants to vote, and they are actually a legitimately, legally qualified voter. That's where I think the emphasis should be first, and then having easier access to voting is fine by me.
So is this a golden opportunity now in New York State to really get some major ethics reform?
Well, I think so. But Speaker Hastie just yesterday, I understand, basically said, well, there doesn't seem to be a stomach for more ethics reform in his conference.
And I'll bet there isn't.
I'm still shocked that he would even say that. We've talked about the pension forfeiture bill that passed the Republicans that was supposed to be part of the budget deal that the Assembly Democrats walked away from. And if you just look at from a numerical count, purely numerical count, the Assembly Democrats have had a much worse time in dealing with corruption in their conference than any other conference in Albany. And again,
so why did they vote against it? Why did they vote against taking pensions away from crooked politicians?
Well, you know, there's different rumors as to why. You know, some union pressures, allegedly. Who knows if that's
true? What do you
mean?
What would the unions have to do with it?
Well, it was, you know, it was an expansion of not just elected officials, but, for instance, Joyce Mitchell from Dannemora Prison.
Right.
She actually, if this law would had been in place, she could have had her pension removed. But they've been balking at doing this bill for obviously several years. And even going forward, it still won't go into place if they even pass the bill for another year. It's sort of prospective versus retrospective.
So why not? But I don't get that. So why not say, okay, we get it. The civil servants are different than politicians who are, after all, voting on all of this stuff. Why not just start with the politicians and forget about the rest of the people in the state?
Well, that's fine. Then do it. But they had that opportunity to get a statewide agreement with the governor and the Senate majority in March.
Right.
So make your case, and if you start step A, then go to step B as well. But there are a lot of people, I shouldn't say a lot, there have been convictions, people that have embezzled money, have done other things like Joyce Mitchell, which cost the taxpayers of the state of New York millions of dollars for those search and the prison break. My point being is you're really just talking about people that have broken the law is part of being on a taxpayer-funded salary, whether you're elected or appointed or civil service. And that's why you're dealing with taxpayer dollars, why everybody should be included. But if it starts with elected officials first, great.
So, Leader Kolb, tell me this. There are so few Republicans in the state assembly. How come?
Well, we don't win enough elections is one part.
It would start there.
There's multiple, you know, we talk about this all the time. You've got, first of all, every time there's a redistricting year, the Assembly Republicans take it on the chin. It's not a fair process. The Senate majority takes care of their folks. They don't care what happens in the Assembly. The Assembly Democrats care about their folks. If we actually had a fair redistricting process, we'd have at least six more seats right now if it was a fair process.
You know, I think this is disgusting. I mean, really, the idea that you would allow elected legislators to draw their own districts. The governor, when he ran the first time, said, that's wrong. I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen anymore. And now it continues to happen. We send our kids to foreign lands to fight for democracy, and yet we allow them to draw districts where only they can win? It doesn't seem right.
Well, and it doesn't seem right the way state government is run. And that's why I'm surprised at rank and file Democrats in the Assembly don't speak up more, not just with Carl Hastie.
They don't speak up anymore. They're the big beneficiaries of it.
Well, my point being is, though, but you got a lot of new blood coming in, not people that have been there for 30 years. But what's amazing is a transformation as they come in. Yeah. We're going to change this place. Yeah. And then within 6 months, and it happened this year, where they start twisting arms on the floor. Joe Morelli starts going up, you got to vote this way, you got to vote that way.
Yep.
And then the speaker starts calling, and all of a sudden, well, what happened to being an independent elected legislator?
Well, the one thing we're seeing from the Shelley Silver trial is that that's long gone. You know, they would come up there with who was going to get the money. No, yes, yes, no. That's wrong. I mean, you know, that's not the way a democracy works, is it?
Well, no, it's not, but it's not long gone. It still exists. And I'll give you an example. We have the Capital Infrastructure Fund, which has been all the conferences. Well, I shouldn't say, look, I don't know about the Senate Democrats, but Speaker Hastie allowed our conference to have access to some project money for their district. The total for the entire conference was roughly $4.5 million for all of our members. Joe Morelli distributed $13 million just by himself on one item. And my point is, I'm all in favor of assembly members and senators having input and try to help their districts at home. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. What I do think it's wrong is when the majorities suck up all the opportunities for their districts
right.
and leave the minority districts in both houses either at a very, very low level or not at all. And, you know, that's what's wrong.
I only got 2 minutes. I want to ask you this question. Is upstate getting screwed?
I wouldn't classify it as being screwed. What I would say is that upstate needs to be looked at differently, just like New York City does. One of the things I've always said with public policy, we shouldn't have a cookie-cutter approach to economic development, to infrastructure, to Medicaid. The more you can let local decision-making on a lot of these programs and flexibility. Flexibility is more the key word here. I think that's better. You know, I've asked this question about the recent Hunger Games that are going to be announced at the end of this year. I said we should have just taken that pot of money and split it evenly for all the regions that didn't get money, such as New York City got money or the Buffalo Billion. So where was the competition for the Buffalo Billion that they got? And I think that's where you get a disproportionate wrong message on upstate. And it's a different animal altogether. Just seemed like when you're talking about funding for the MTA, where's the equity funding for roads and bridges in upstate? These things have existed for a long time, Alan, but that's where the upstate gets really upset because they feel that, you know, they're second fiddle to the dominance of the New York City impact on the legislature.
Well, I hate to say it, but we're out of time. Ryan Kolb, always a great honor to have you here in the studios with us. It's wonderful. Our guest has been New York State Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Alan Chartok, and this has been the Capital Connection.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.